This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at weightwatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we're into Samwell 4 of A Storm of Swords, the last Samwell Tarly chapter in this book. We will probably see him relatively soon in Boiled Leather if I'm...
I don't think so, actually.
Oh, is he later? Well, then I don't want to do it that way.
Let's see. I thought I wrote this down. Samwell will be chapter 12. He would be chapter 6 in A Feast for Crows. But this is his first chapter is one of my favorite chapters because they have it back to back in the Boiled Leather reading order. And we, in theory, could even do it the other way because it's like the crossover chapter with John.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, remember there's like the crossover chapter?
Yeah, and they kind of
John too. So I need to go back and actually read it again to see if there is a reason as to why you should specifically read Sam's before John's.
I don't think there would be, but I mean, it's been a while since I've read it, and I, you know, yeah. What am I going to remember from two specific chapters? This is going to be so fun doing Boiled Leather.
I'm so excited for it. I mean, did you see there was a Winds of Winter tease? Did you see that? Some 4chan person, and everyone's like, ugh.
Yeah.
I was like, it ain't happening.
Yeah, the publisher came out, was like, this is not true. Which I did think it was a little weird that they acknowledged it.
Right.
Like, that was odd, wasn't it?
Yeah. George still,
I mean, how many rumors have there been, and they never respond?
Right. There's been, George has, by the way, still not posted anything.
Huh. The Mad King tickets are on sale, by the way.
This is the longest post in between.
Man. He's probably just chilling.
Yeah. So, but yes. Anyway, let's do the how you doing, how you been, Jimmy? Because it's just been craziness, man. 2 weeks ago, we had to do like a short episode because you like have work going on. Last week, we knew we'd be out. Mm-hmm. But because I had to go over to the beach for my daughter's birthday.
You another vacation?
Pretty much. Just always on them.
Dude, and I hate that you spend so much time with your family.
It's I know. And then this week... So we just had some insulation put in our roof.
Congrats.
That's pretty cool, right? And then somehow they, I don't know what they did up there, but they must have stepped on a wire, pulled a wire or something. And so now one of the circuits in my house is like tripped. And I tried, you know, go to the circuit breaker, try to flip it. And it's like not going, almost like a little spark. I was I definitely don't need to set a spark into my freshly insulated attic, you know, all that like flammable stuff.
Oh my gosh.
So thankfully, actually the office is okay, this and you know, Ellie's room is good. Sorry. Is that, but it's like both our bathrooms and our bedroom and like half of the kitchen, thankfully not the circuit that's like on the fridge and the stove and stuff. So, but still it's sort of like annoying, but we have extension cords running from this side of the house to that side of the house. So I have like all these extension cords underneath me right now that I'm trying not to like, you know, roll over or step on or anything. So it's just a whole big freaking.
So what's the fix?
They on their dime, they said, hey, we have an electrician we contract with, and they will come out and take a look.
Well, so, hey, that's nice,
but it's not until Monday, and so it happened yesterday.
That's not so nice. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's unfortunate. Did I tell you about my hot water tank going out? Did I talk about
this? Yes, you did. Then we talked about that.
On the podcast?
I think it was at the very end. Remember, I was like, I think we were recording. And I think my wife just texted me and said our hot water tank. Jeez, it's just crazy.
Well, so I guess I should give an update on it for the 12 people who care about my water tank. So dude, whenever it's all good now, but there's gas that goes to it. So I can't put one in I have to get it inspected and all this stuff. Sure. Right. So call the first guy. They go, we could have this done in 2 days. I'm like, sick. They come out, they're talking to me. And I'm thinking a couple grand probably, right? This dude goes, yeah, all right. So we had everything up, warranty. It's about $10,000.
Jesus.
Matt, I swear to God, I looked at him and I said, please get out of my house. I did. I said, I appreciate you guys coming out. You're going to need to leave now. And so $10,000 for a water
That's too much.
Are we doing out here? Like,
well, I will tell you this, and I'm not, this isn't me like trying to talk shit about, you know, utility people who, you know, but a few weeks
but
ago,
I'm about to.
I am about to. It was maybe like December, it was a couple of months ago. Our shower wouldn't do hot water, and so we have like the, you know, some showers have like the handle that you turn like left and right. Yeah. Ours has that like old school ball that you
can,
I hate that thing. But anyway,
mine has it too.
And so I think what's happened, because I pulled it off and I'm like, I can turn it and like I can still get hot water. So I think that like the bearing or something is messed up. Like, not, I don't think. Anyway, so we call this plumber and he's like, oh yeah, man, we're going to have to like go through the drywall and like of like the other bathroom to get in back behind there to like pull off this pipe and all this stuff. And I'm just like, I don't know about all that. Like, okay, this is not what I was expecting. And he was like upset that I wasn't ready to go like right then and there. I was like, dude, I'm like calling for like a quote and like, what do we need to happen? So then called like one of my wife's, you know, mom, it's like my mother-in-law has like a family friend. This like old guy comes out and he's like, nope, I think you're right. I think it's just this like little bearing thing. He was in and out 30 minutes, 100, like he's literally just like $100. We'll call it even.
Dang.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you, I paid less than a third of what they quoted me. I went to a local company and I even told the company, I said, can you beat 10 grand? They said, what? Yeah. He tried to charge you 10 grand. I was like,
when we got our HVAC, man, one of the people were like $10,000 more. Anyway, we don't have to talk about all this stuff. Just a little catching up. It's just ridiculous.
I mean, we could have worse problems. I mean,
it's good. We could definitely.
We're living large. We're doing fine. Everything's good. The world's fine.
It's Anywho, I had a thought. Actually, I wanted to run by you because I've been, you know, we've talked about this for a while and I've been typing up some theories and stuff like that I want for Patreon, but I feel like what I want to do for Patreon is I think it's the easiest way to do it and it's fun. And now I'm actually kind of, we're in this in between and of House of the Dragon and Knight of the Seven Kingdoms and all this stuff. Do you think we could start a rewatch of Game of Thrones?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Have it be our Patreon. Cause I feel like without one, we can crank out more episodes. More Patreon episodes, which I really want to do, but I also feel like that's super. And I want to rewatch it. Like I'm finally at that point where I'm like, I really kind of want to sit down and rewatch Game of Thrones because as we hit Boiled Leather, like that's where the show really kind of starts to differentiate. And I kind of feel like, oh, getting ahead of that would be pretty cool. And I also feel like Game of Thrones is now entering that like Sopranos Breaking Bad type thing where like when I go on TikTok and stuff, I'm seeing more people just like sharing Game of Thrones scenes.
Yeah, and that will probably be the case for the rest of our lives, I would imagine. Like, it'll come in and out. I'll tell you what. You know, this is, like, not what people would expect, but I'm actually most excited to rewatch 5 through 8 because I've rewatched 1 through 4
so many
times.
But I think that's also, like, it's something cool people want to do it. I want to do it. And then it's also something where I'm not, like, trying to come up with these like big massive theories. Cause I'm like, sometimes I feel like I run out of theories. I'm just like, I already talked about that. Like, you know, the Varys is the merman. Yeah, this is this. And I do feel like more often than not, I kind of like the theories that come a little more naturally. And I like to just kind of do those on the show.
Yeah, that happens to us during the reread. Yeah. I mean, we'll come across something and we'll be like, well, what if? I mean, that's happened multiple times, I think, in A Storm of Swords.
Yeah, I actually have a TikTok I'm kind of working on now. I think somebody sent us a raven, and it was basically this idea of Arian Young Griff being Arian Brightflame's kid.
Dang. Okay.
Or like his descendant. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's because there are more Targaryens over there and stuff. So yeah. So anyway, that's just something we could talk more about it afterwards, but that's just kind of where my headspace is at right now on that.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a good idea.
Well, cool. All right, then we might do that.
Do you think we should wait to after House of the Dragon?
I think we just start it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll just go at our own pace. We'll just be like, hey, do you want to do one this week? And then, but I think it'll crank out a lot more Patreon.
Do you do an episode per episode, or do you like two episodes?
However, we'll figure it out. I kind of
feel like, okay, yeah, we
like one. That's like 100 episodes.
That's a lot of episodes. That's a lot.
But they won't be like big full hour reviews. It'll be kind of like a rewatch. You know, like probably like 20 minutes. I would say
a lot of us going, that's sick.
Yeah. But before we dive in, though, I did have a question I wanted to pose you.
Okay.
About this, Matt, just no, because. Just because I was talking to one of my coworkers about, we were talking about the Pit, which, by the way,
no, I'm not caught up. I'm four episodes behind.
Yeah, that's about where I'm at. So I'm, because now tonight, as we're recording, the final episode will come out, so I can just binge watch the rest of it. I have.
Oh, is tonight the final?
Yes, tonight's the season finale, I think.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but my thought on this was also I've watched some other reunions, like I rewatched the Malcolm in the Middle reunion.
Is it good?
Show. Yeah, it's good for four episodes. It's just, I think it's mostly just be like, this is a potentially one thing. I am watching the Scrubs kind of reboot, which I will actually say I think is the best reboot kind of revitalization. It's not, you know, I don't like a reboot to me is like, hey, we're kicking something off completely. What would you call this? What would you call the Scrubs?
Like a revisiting? It's a
continuation. Yeah.
Yeah, like
sequel, but I guess. I think where the Scrubs reboot, reunion, whatever you want to, revitalization, whatever you want to call it, this new Scrubs, it succeeds where so many other shows like it have tried and failed, is that it still at the end of the day makes the core characters the main part of the show.
Right.
Okay. And so that is like really interesting. And then you have the other characters, which they kind of let like rise and shine into their roles. But again, that's just kind of a side point about it being great. You know, but what it kind of has me thinking is it's only an 8-episode season. Malcolm in the Middle is only like 4. And I have the Seven Kingdoms being smaller. The Pit isn't as big a, you know, it's not like a big CGI production. So their plan is to get it out more. Is this going to be the blueprint? Is like a Knight of the Seven Kingdoms going to be the blueprint? And would we be fine with that, having a smaller show every year, as opposed to waiting like 2 to 3 years for shows like House of the Dragon season 4 and Severance and Stranger Things?
Yeah, we kind of talked about this. Remember, I was talking about how the next big show isn't going to be Game of Thrones. It's going to be The Pit.
Sure.
Like, yeah. I mean, that's 100% it. Especially, I mean, it's obvious that money's getting harder to come by. And I think the less the budget, the better. I mean, House of the Dragon, I'm sorry, Knight of Seven Kingdoms. I mean, we heard the showrunner talk multiple times about the budget. Like, yeah. I, you know what I liked about that? They talked about it in a way where it was like they were up for the challenge. It wasn't like, well, we got the budget cut, so we can't do anything good. It was like, okay, we have a budget cut. How can we make it work? Like, that's a really good sign of a good showrunner. But anyways, yeah, I do think. I think that everyone's going to be going smaller scale, and these things come in cycles.
And I'm fine. Like, I would be fine with whatever the next Game of Thrones show is, which, you know, obviously after House of the Dragon, they're going to probably try to do another. We're getting the Aegon's Conquest movie. I just hope they give it to somebody good. Just give Denis Villeneuve a blank check.
I don't think he wants to do it.
I don't know, man. I think he would if you offered it. I don't know.
I mean, I want him to. Don't get me wrong.
You get to work with Jordan. Actually, you know, I was thinking about this today too. You know who I'd actually be fine they give it to?
Don't say Michael Bay.
No, give it to Dan and Dave.
Matt.
You can't deny the fact that when they were given the source material, they created the greatest show in the history of television.
That is not true. They diverted from the source material long before they ran out.
But it doesn't matter, because what did they still pull off? When they had the source material, was it not the greatest show? Like,
well, no, that's what I think. They had source material in season 5 and they threw it out the window and kicked George out of the writer's room.
But they still, but I mean, look at seasons 1 through 4. So if George and Martin and Dan and Dave are working together, you don't think so?
Dude, I don't think George R. Martin wants to work with Dan and Dave ever again.
You don't think so?
No, dude. Have you seen them together since?
There's no reason for them to be together.
Oh, George would find a reason. He went and visited some of the old cast for Game of Thrones whenever he was in England.
But what are those guys up to?
Dan and Dave, Three Body Problem was decent on Netflix. I saw some people hate on it, but I actually thought it was pretty good.
One of them was involved in the Wolverine Origin movie, but again, like, and that movie sucked. But that's
the thing. We're not talking about TV. We're talking about movie.
They've done movies. Let's look. What all have they actually done?
Brother.
Let's look them up.
This dude said Dan and Dave. That is insane.
Why? But I mean, dude, hold on. Let me ask you, if you knew that you were getting like season 4 level quality, then these guys were on there. Why? What do you mean you don't know that?
We have to do with what you've done for me lately.
Well, what they did during Game of Thrones was freaking amazing. And you're telling me that the battle of season 8 wasn't sick?
Okay. I mean, yeah. But,
okay.
Come on.
But what I'm saying is that they would have
debating the internet right now.
What I'm saying is, when they have the source material, they cooked.
What source material is it for Aegon's Conquest, though? It's Spark Notes.
It's a novella that's like the whole thing is in Fire and Blood and World of Ice and Fire and its own novella in that sword Book of Swords, whatever.
Yeah, that is true, I guess. I mean, but it's much like House of the Dragon, where like a lot of the details still have to be filled in.
Sure, but the difference is you're making one two and a half hour movie as opposed to an entire series.
Yeah, what do you even focus on in the movie?
Like, so that's why I'm a little more like, I'd be fine if, I'm not saying they're my first choice, but if like it was between them and somebody who, I don't know. I mean, well, yeah, definitely.
I'd take Dan and Dave over Michael Bay.
Sure.
Dude, you are going to get absolutely tossed online.
You can't, but I mean, like, you still have to make this short. You still have to get, I will, but you still have to give them credit for creating, like being the showrunners of arguably a top 3 show in the history of television.
Listen, I'm not disagreeing about that, but sometimes you just gotta leave it alone. You just gotta leave it in the past. Also, I will tell you this, I don't think they would want to go anywhere near it. I think they're gonna spend the rest of their careers trying to get away from it.
I don't think they would. I don't think they'd be offered it.
Oh, no. No, not a chance.
You don't think Warner Brothers doesn't want to work with them again?
I don't think Dan and Dave want to work in A Song of Ice and Fire ever again. Which, honestly, to be fair to them, I mean, I think they dropped the ball, but like, you imagine how many death threats they were, like, you know how it is.
But you know what you don't see? You don't ever really, you don't see, like you do in other shows, the cast coming out and talking out against them.
You had a little bit of that with
but it's not nearly as much as where they're like, oh, they're terrible people to work with. They were rude. They were, I mean, it's just like final season. Some people are like, yeah, we didn't like the way our characters went.
Yeah.
But you also have to think about like the structure of the company at that point had totally changed.
Yeah.
And like, yeah. who knows what the AT&T execs were telling them at the time. Everyone's starting to become big actors. I mean, Emilia Clarke's in Star Wars. I mean, you know, I mean, they'd also been doing it for an extremely long period of time.
That's the best argument, is how done everyone was. I mean, sure. They were burnt out.
Right. And everyone can say after the fact, oh, we would have been willing to come back. But like, a great example is like the Last Dance, right? The Michael Jordan documentary, where they all sit there and say after the fact, yeah, we were going to come back. But I mean, I watched the same documentary. I mean, I don't know that you could have in that moment. They shouldn't have got rid of them. But, you know, I mean, it's hard to really pinpoint at the exact moment what everyone's feeling, what everyone's saying. And you still have to give these dudes credit for the fact that they still created, like,
I give them credit.
Peak television, most awards of any show in history.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you gave these, when these guys were cooking is when they had the full source material. And if you're doing an Aegon's Conquest movie you gave it to them again, not my first choice, but
I don't agree that I don't like the argument.
You think it would suck?
It would probably not be great, but here's the thing. Regardless of that, I don't like the narrative online of like Dan and Dave only messed up because they didn't have source material. Like, that's just not true. Like, honestly, Matt, one of the worst things they did is at the end of Tyrion's trial, they messed it up from the book. Like, they completely went away from that, and then Tyrion honestly became a pretty useless character after that moment. Because the core piece of his character is the lie to Jaime. So, I mean, they did good things in season 6, I think. And even season 8, there's some stuff in there that's good.
I mean, season 7, which I think that's where the show really fell off the wheels.
I hate season 7, actually.
But, I mean, let's not act like 100% of season 7 was like trash. I mean, the Littlefinger thing is what really starts to like derail the whole thing.
I dislike 7 more than 8. That's probably one of my.
But let's not act like, I mean, the stuff with the White Walkers and going like, I mean, just like what it actually you're seeing on screen. I mean, it's pretty sick.
Oh, it's always been a spectacle and such.
Again, and that's why I feel like this movie would be like this movie specifically would be. Like Aegon's Conquest, it's pretty cut and dry. It's mostly going to be people torching people with dragons. That's going to be like half the movie.
Is that what they're going to focus on, you think, is like the actual conquest? I just want to see Maegar the Cruel.
I mean, it's just like when it comes, I mean, Denis Villeneuve is my 100% first choice. I would pay him set the record for the highest amount of any director ever paid for a movie. $50 million. I don't care what you get to make it happen. He's the guy. And he's with Warner Brothers because Dune is a Warner Brothers thing.
Yeah, he is.
And Dune is like,
say he's Dune's working like, on a mystery project. Could you imagine?
He might already be the guy.
I don't think he is. I would love it. I mean, I'll wish it, but I think Spike Lee would be the guy.
I mean, who else? In all seriousness, I don't think they would pick some no name for this.
I don't know enough directors, to be honest with you.
Yeah, who's like, probably the front runner?
I'm not a big like Hollywood guy. Is it Roger Eggers or Robert Eggers who did The Witch? I would say The Witch. What else did he do? That I love all of his movies. Oh, Lighthouse. By the way, he would be terrible. I'm not suggesting him, but like, I'm just saying, I don't really know any directors. I mean, Spielberg, I guess.
Oh, man, you know, it's so tough because so much of it comes down to what is it you're working with. Like another guy, I think of. I think Gareth Edwards could freaking pull it off.
What's he done?
Gareth Edwards did he did the 2014 Godzilla movie, like when they brought it Bryan Cranston, where they started the whole Kong.
Yeah, Godzilla. Where they bait and switched us. Yeah.
Yeah, he did Jurassic World Rebirth, but the Jurassic World movies have been just whatever. But he also did Rogue One.
Oh, Rogue One's a good movie.
Yeah, I like that movie. Freaking phenomenal, fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I feel like I'd probably trust him to be able to do it, because that's like a spectacle war. I mean, that's what this ultimately has to be, is like a spectacle war movie. God, give it Christopher Nolan, but he hates Warner Brothers now, so that ain't happening.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. He's also a little bit pretentious.
I think he has the right to be pretentious, because every movie he makes is like,
God, hey, I'll just put it out there.
Goat tier movies every time.
I watched Tenet. I didn't like it.
Yeah, but I mean, The Dark
Knight. That's easily my least favorite Nolan movie.
Interstellar.
Oh, yeah, I love him. I just thought Tenet was not for me.
Yeah.
I got like halfway through it and was like, I would rather be doing almost anything else than watching this movie. Also, the sound is really bad in that movie. It drove me nuts.
Who's the front runner for directing Aegon's Conquest? Who is
Ryan Condell?
The writer. Hold on. Is there a guy who's confirmed to be writing it?
Yeah, I thought they announced the writer. Like that was the big news lately.
Willimon. He is confirmed to be writing it.
Yeah, that was kind of the big news, being like it's actually happening now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'd say I trust this guy to write it. Okay. So here he's mostly done big, like Netflix, HBO style TV. Okay. Includes, he was the executive producer and he was the creator, executive producer and writer of House of Cards, which did have a pretty bad final season, but that I think is not his fault.
Kevin Spacey
basically ruined it. The second to last season was like even still sort of like, okay, I feel like they're just trying to like kind of trump it up to catch the, like, because that was like 2016, right? To really try to catch like all the Trump, and it was like,
yeah,
it was like you had your own identity. You didn't need to like go into real world stuff, because like its own identity was sort of cool. It also did The First. I don't know anything about it. It's a British drama series. Grand Army, again, same thing. Don't know anything. He also wrote 6 episodes of Andor.
Oh yeah, you like that.
Oh yeah. Andor season two is, I mean, it's like peak television. You should, even as a non-Star Wars person, Jimmy, you should watch it. I mean, that's like the only thing I would really recommend you highly watch is Andor, because it's phenomenal.
I watched the first episode and
the first 5 episodes are a ridiculously slow burn. But once you get to like episode 6, which it's just like peak from then on out.
I've heard it's amazing.
You should watch it. It's so up your alley.
Well, it sounds like this guy wrote.
He also is an executive producer on Severance.
All right, yeah, I'm in. This guy sounds great. I will say that's good. That shows that they're willing to go out and get some big dogs. I mean,
right.
They could easily just make a slapstick movie and say, you know, fuck it. The nerds will come watch it either way. So that's good.
He hasn't really worked on many movies, though. But, I mean, he's worked on, like, high-level television. So that's basically working on movies.
Well, here we are. We got the writer.
Okay. That's all right. Cool. Let's dive in to the chapter here. It's a short chapter.
We need to put that on a t-shirt, dude.
It is Samwell 4. So at Castle Black, Gilly is nursing both her own son and Mance Raiders as Dala died giving birth. Sam, by the way, pour one out for Dala.
Yeah. I mean,
she's like shows up on the page like 3 times and then she died. And it's like, she died. Yeah, I mean, that's her entire character arc.
Yeah, there's a lot of death during childbirth in this world.
Well, I mean, it's just also like she exists in like, I think like 3 sentences total. And it's like, and Mance Raider is with his wife, Dala. Oh, Dala died. Like that's
which is kind of interesting considering the fact that George loves some random side character. Like seriously. He loves writing up a big piece for this character that doesn't matter. Dala dead.
There's a character we should write. I mean, does Dala have King's blood? Whoa.
Okay.
We need a Dala backstory. Sam and Gilly have recently returned to Castle Black, meeting up with Dennis Malister and the men from the Shadow Tower. They also join with Dwayne, Ed, and Giant, survivors of the Bridge of Skulls, with where Bowen Marsh held back the Weeper's advance. Sam is happy to be reunited with John, although he is wary of King Stannis' army being present at Castle Black. It was the king who defeated the wildlings, scattering their remnants back to the Haunted Forest. Val wants to bring her sister's baby to Mance, but John tells her that only Maester Aemon is permitted to see the imprisoned wildling king. Alone, Sam asks John, could there be honor in a lie if it were told for a good purpose? As Sam is considering sending Gilly and her son to Horn Hill with a letter claiming that he fathered the boy. John reveals that Slint still considers him a traitor because he did not kill Mance as he was sent to do. Sam remembers swearing to Bran and Jojen Reed not to reveal to anyone, including John, that Bran is still alive. Coldhand's last words to Sam were, "Let the world believe the boy is dead. We want no seekers coming after us. Swear it, Samwell of the Night's Watch. Swear it for the life you owe me." And Sam has kept his vows to all three. Later, Sam considers the last vote for a new Lord Commander, with Sir Dennis Malister still leading, but no one near the majority. At dinner, Bowen Marsh withdraws his name from the voting and backs Janice Slint. When the votes are tallied that night, both Sir Dennis and Cotter Pike have lost votes, and Slint has gained on both of them. Sitting with Gren, Pip, and Dolorous Ed, Pip suggests that if Sam were to persuade either Sir Dennis or Sir Cotter Pike to set aside their quarrels and back the other, a new Lord Commander could be decided, preferably one who would be beneficial to the Watch, so long as it was not Janice Slint.
Ooh, a lot of politicking going down.
Yeah, what kind of voting system do they have?
I imagine ranked choice.
Yeah, I'm down for some ranked choice.
Yeah, why not? Let's switch it up.
I mean, some states here have that.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think the law operates under ranked choice. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, Ohio. I think they tried to do it and it got shut down.
Yeah. What does Ohio know?
Nothing. I don't know. Nothing. I just sort of follow the local politics there, and I just love it.
Because you don't just live in it.
Well, I did live there, but it's like this town of like 10 people, and it's always like anytime I follow like the little local community page, like we're thinking about putting a roundabout in here, and people are like, "This country's going to shit." Like, you know, like, it's like the tiniest thing. It's like the tiniest thing. It's like the stuff here at the, you know, I mean, well, yeah. What are they voting here? So they must have ranked choice because they're sitting there and they're saying, well, we need more votes to make it work. And you have to have a 2/3 majority. I don't think they really kind of go into exactly how it works, other than they need more votes.
George was like, I don't have any extra chapters. This book is at maximum manuscript pages. I'm not explaining the magic system of voting.
Yeah, yeah. So do you have to, does he say exactly you need a certain amount of votes? Because at one point he says, I have 168 for Pike. Clyde has said, we're 2 votes short by my count and 1 by Sam's. Sam's count is correct. So you must have to get a certain amount of votes.
Yeah, it's tough. It's a popularity contest, some would say.
Yeah, 203 for Sir Dennis Malister, 169. Yeah, so does he actually say exactly, do you have to get like 2/3? What do you have to get?
You know, when you look at the candidates, it's very interesting. And John, you could tell why John maybe wouldn't get them. If you think about it, the whole wildling stuff makes John seem pretty radical. And then on top of that, Stannis is at the wall, and it could be interpreted that that is John's guy. This is probably one of the biggest events to happen at the wall within like 100 years at this
point. Oh, 100%, because all these people are showing. I mean, other than probably like when last one's probably when like Blood Raven showed up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think Now I'm looking back through to some of my notes here. I don't think they ever say. It was a good hour before he could excuse himself to the Ravens. On the way up to the rookery, he stopped to check the tally he had made of last night's count, and at the start of the choosing, more than 30 names had been offered, but most had withdrawn once it became clear they could not win. Seven remained last night, and then they start talking about the votes, but I don't know that they actually say what exactly you need to do in order to win.
I can't. Yeah. I can't recall.
That's okay. I'll keep looking. But so some other big takeaways, because there's kind of a it is one of these shorter chapters, but it's one where you're getting like, oh, here's like this entire piece sporadic, of story man. That's passing. Yeah.
Yeah. And Bowen Marsh, always good to see Bowen Marsh in a chapter. Always appreciate that. And then these babies. I think a lot of people going through the next two books and waiting for wins. I think this is one of the things. It's like, what will end up being the end game with these children?
Yeah.
You're still looking for the election system.
I am still looking. I don't think they say how many votes you actually need and how it's decided. I think it's just something you just kind of see that it's happening in the background.
Book shit.
You know? Gee.
One star.
But I'll agree. Yeah, I mean, the baby stuff here that's about to start happening, like the baby swap, is, man, one of the biggest things. And we've talked about this, where I feel like this is what everybody thought. I mean, I remember when we started this podcast, everyone thought that the baby was going to have something to do with like the Night King season 8, this huge deal, because they did expand it. They did embellish it where you see the Night King, who obviously isn't in the books, but he takes the Craster's baby and like turns the eyes blue. And we all thought, and there could still be something to that, because George is keeping it around, that he actually wants it to be even more crazy that they're taking Mance Rayder's baby. I mean, that seems like somewhat significant.
Yeah.
In the arc. I mean, in the plot. I mean, and it does kind of raise questions. Ultimately, what is going to be the role? There's a purpose to this. Like, George has swapped these babies for a purpose, and it's with Sam and Gilly for a purpose.
Mm-hmm. And Mance Rayder is way bigger deal than it would appear, right? He's down at Winterfell, if I'm not mistaken, when we leave him.
One thing we have not explored. This would be interesting.
Okay.
Okay. So we have explored the possibility, I guess, but I've never really thought about this piece of the story. A common theory about Mance Rayder is that he is like Arthur Dayne or Rhaegar Targaryen. Right. Okay. That's one of, but like that would make him.
Rhaegar's son. The baby.
Yeah. I mean, I can't believe we've never thought about it like that. And like his child, which in theory could be like another head of the dragon, is.
Oh, wow.
With Sam at the Citadel.
I used to be pretty big on the Mance's Rhaegar train just because of the way he is described, and he's like musically talented. Like there's some stuff there. But with that said, I eventually fell off that train the more I reread. But for the sake of having some fun, that is a great point, Matt. Like, if he were to be Rhaegar, let's just have fun with it. If it is his wife.
Then it's not even like a bastard, right?
Yeah. But also just like, oh, wait, Rhaegar Targaryen has another child? Like, that would be...
Yeah.
I've always...
And, you know, I've never seen people when they... And this is probably one of the things that should cause us to actually maybe think he's not. But when you go and you look at the Rhaegar is like Mance is Rhaegar theories, none of them ever talk about the baby.
That's true.
Like it's always just like something that's completely lost in those theories. But it is, I mean, it is a pretty important part to it. If you want to like try to make a connection, certainly would have King's blood.
Yeah. Damn. that's an interesting angle to that theory.
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't know what else we're expecting out of these babies. So let's just run with that. I think that might be.
I mean, it does raise the question though. Like there, something is going to happen with these babies.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're like, they swapped them for a reason. And, you know, the only thing, if you want to bring up Craster again, which we've done, I think we talk about Craster more than any other song.
Yeah, we're the Craster podcast.
We're the Craster people. Craster Bloodraven. Something's going on up there. That one, that last Craster theory posted as a, got like over 100,000 on YouTube, on shorts, when I was like, it's so crazy that like, he's like protected. Like none of the, like even the other wildlings are like, yeah, we're not going over there. Like the Thens are cannibals. And there's other wildlings to be like, hey, this guy has an entire encampment of women. You would think they would want to go grab that when their entire society is about like, basically like forcing a spear wife. You know what I mean? Like
taking what you want. Yeah.
Yeah. It is like taking what you want. So it's kind of wild that none of them ever go over there. Maybe it's because they're all fearful of the others and the White Walkers.
Yeah.
But that baby is potentially going to be at Winterfell.
Yeah. And then I just think it's so interesting that Mance lives on and now he's down at Winterfell when we leave it. Like Mance has a big role to play, which maybe feels a little bit of like there's more to Mance than we realize.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when you look at the connections, I mean, I just want to look and see what so I'll just pull up like Reddit. The most common theory is this one from like 13 years ago, where somebody says, you know, like Prince Rhaegar, obviously. So let's just look at the connections. Mance, the coat Mance wears is red and black. Prince Rhaegar dies on the ruby ford of the Trident. There's obviously ruby glamours with Melisandre. Music is mentioned very often when they are both described. Mance also is playing a harp. Both men are described as great as everything they do. In A Storm of Swords, Mance tells John he snuck over the wall a few different times and even went to Winterfell. Mance is constantly playing the Dornishman's wife, right? Who we, you know, with Elia Martell.
Yeah.
At Winterfell in a dance with dragons, Abel, which is the other one, like, which Bale the Bard. Mm-hmm. Mance changes the words to stealing a Northman's daughter, which Rhaegar does.
Yeah.
So there's definitely like some, you know, connections with that. He also has a pretty strong interest in Jon.
What if he knows Jon's a Targaryen?
It could be as simple as that because he's smart enough to put it together.
Yeah, I would almost wonder though, what would be the purpose for him to keep that under wraps if he did? Like, I don't really think, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's an interesting angle. Yeah, Mance Rayder. We should dive more into Mance Rayder, Matt. I like this.
You know what else, though? We did a theory a while back. I did one. I think it was a couple years ago, and we kind of talked about it more recently, was the possibility of, let's go to a different route that he's not Rhaegar, that Mance and Craster are brothers.
Yeah, we did talk about that. Yeah,
we did talk about that. So that could be any random wildling because they both have the same type of parentage in that they're both, I think their father is a Night's Watch member and their mother is a wildling.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's the same man and woman. Could be this one of, you know, probably it's more likely that it's the same man, different women. But we talked about the possibility of them being either half brothers, brothers. I even did another one that's talked about, like, well, maybe Bloodraven's their dad, right? Like, because the timeline kind of works up. We talked about that as well. But if you did start to piece some of that together, then that would actually have some connection between the babies that are swapped.
Yeah.
That they would, in theory, be like cousins or, you know, whatever. So there's then that actually ties into it a little bit more as well.
Yeah, if anyone's listening and you have thoughts about this, I'd love to hear someone's like fresh perspective on it.
Because then that would actually give Mance and Craster more of a connection. And it would connect these babies more than simply being swapped. Because something is going to happen with these babies. And there's really not a lot of theories on the purpose of it. Other than like, oh, they do it to get it out of Melisandre's hands.
Which is a good, pretty good reason, to be fair.
Right.
Hmm.
But Melisandre also doesn't seem like she's actually trying to like use Craster's King's Blood and.
No, she doesn't.
She purposely glamors Mance Rayder, you know, she has some other plan for him.
Is Mance Rayder Azor Ahai?
I mean, it's just so crazy.
We've already settled that.
It's just so wild. Cause it's one of those things where, you know, it's going to play some role, but there's all the other stuff that's going on, all the other pieces. How do these two connect when there is like a pretty strong thing that happens? So like something has to happen. Something has to shift somewhere. And it's one of those shifts that's like when we talk about Sansa and Stannis and stuff, it's like, we can see the outcomes, right? That whatever piece George decides to move. Okay. Like Sansa has to go in a few different roles. And that's going to basically tell us how a lot of other dominoes will fall. Because some we can tell, like, we know some of the stuff that's going to happen. John, he's going to get resurrected.
Yeah.
Right. Arya at some point is coming back. Daenerys at some point is coming back. We know those. So some of the pieces that fall to get Daenerys to come back, in the grand scheme of things, probably don't really matter. It far more matters when she comes. But man, these babies are a piece of the puzzle. And it's just such a wild card as to what they could be.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be more than what we have right now, for sure.
Because in the show, I'm sorry, I don't want to cut you off, but in the show, the baby's role ultimately ends up being like a piece of the puzzle to Sam and Gilly's relationship.
Yeah.
Right. Is that Sam kind of says, okay, I will help you with your baby. And that's, you know, a piece of the puzzle for their relationship. That's really the only thing it ends up being. But now you've even lost that, I shouldn't say you've lost. They went with that direction. Whereas here it's Gilly's like just holding on to some like other baby. That's not even hers.
Yeah. And so Sam's in Old Town now, right?
Yeah, at the end. Yeah.
And isn't Euron sailing for Old Town?
Yeah, but
I'm just trying to think if there's anything that we could like tie in, of course, with Euron. Because we always try to figure, like, wouldn't it be crazy if somehow Euron, I don't know, gets a kid, and then Sam's doing like the Taken, like Mission Impossible, like trying to get it back.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case, unfortunately.
Yeah. Here, let me, I'll pull up some of the quotes here. Right. So there are some lines in here, and this is one of the lines that's caused me to go down that, like clearly Craster and Mance have some sort of like, relationship, but they've, you know, they rapport with each other, because you sort of at the beginning here, it's strange, he said to Sam. Craster had no love for Mance, nor Mance for Craster, but now Craster's daughter is feeding Mance's son. I have the milk, Gilly said, her voice soft and shy. Mine is only a little. He's not so greedy with this one. The wildling woman Val turned to face them. I've heard the queen's men saying that the red woman means to give Mance to the fire as soon as he's strong enough. John gave her a weary look. Mance is a deserter from the Night's Watch. The penalty for that is death. If the watch had taken him, he would have been hanged by now, but he's the king's captive, and no one knows the king's mind but the red woman. I want to see him, Val said. I want to show him his son. He deserves that much before you kill him. It goes on a little bit here. And then ultimately it kind of ends up at this line here. He says he won't. Craster's his saying, growing up a bastard in his grandfather's castle, John shrugged. That depends in a great part on your father and what sort of boy this is. If he takes after you, because Sam's talking about fathering the baby. Mm-hmm. He won't. Craster's his real father. You saw him. He was hard as an old tree stump. And Gilly is stronger than she looks. If the boy shows any skill with Sword or Lance, he should have a place with your father's household guard, at least, John said. It's not unknown for bastards to be trained as squires and raised in knighthood. But you'd be best sure Gilly can play this game convincingly. From what you've told me of Lord Randall, I doubt he would take kindly to being deceived.
Yeah. So there is a kind of cool thematic piece here, or at least like callbacks in some ways. I mean, we realize that Sam is asking John, could there be honor in a lie if we're told for a good purpose? This is a really good line because John has had to lie since going to the wall, right? When he's with the wildlings. Sam is lying to John in the basically, I shouldn't say lying. He's omitting to tell him about Bran and Jojen Reed.
Sure.
But also it calls back to Ned Stark, which is the character of honor in this. Like, he drives the theme of honor in book one. But Ned lied about Jon Snow's parentage.
Yeah.
And now Sam is looking at that lie and saying, could there be honor in a lie? John's the lie.
Yeah.
That's some layered stuff right there. And George did it in a sentence.
That's why he's the goat.
Dude, that is like, if you really step back and think about how many lies are being thought about right here, and then some that aren't even known, which Sam, I think, still probably is the one that's going to figure out John's parentage. Or John Connington. I mean, I could see either or. But I don't know. I just, when I saw that line come up, I was like, my God.
I still would be totally down if it was Gilly. At the Citadel, but it could be, it could, because we've said that John Connington is totally going to do Jorah Mormont's role at the Citadel.
Yeah,
but instead of him like flat out telling him, hey, here's what's happening, he could tell him a few pieces, and then that's how Sam puts it together. And Gilly together.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, especially for Sam's character and the role he fills.
Yeah, props to Gilly, by the way. I mean, I love the fact that's the things I love, when it's just this like total random side character, but you know, I mean, she's a smaller role, and then she's the one that reveals like officially reveals the piece.
Yeah, I love it too. And it's like, you know, it's like when Sam becomes Sam the Slayer, like it's unlikely. And then all of a sudden, boom, these characters make a huge impact. It's great.
Yeah. Okay, continuing on, just a few other pieces I want to read here. So this is when they're talking, they start to shift to Lear a little bit to talk about like Alistair Thorne and stuff like that. But he says, what everyone knows is that Sir Alistair is a knight from a noble line and trueborn. Well, I'm the bastard who killed Corin Halfhand. By the way, that's who I should have picked in our I literally had him written down in our draft. It's like I should have picked Corin Halfhand.
Well, he's Arthur Dane, so.
Well, it could be. And Maester Luwin's Luwin Martell. So, so he says, anyway, I'm the bastard who killed Corin Halfhand and bedded with a spear wife, the warg, I've heard them call me. How can I be a warg without a wolf? I ask you, his mouth twisted. I don't even dream of ghosts anymore. All my dreams are of the crypts of the stone kings of their thrones. Sometimes I hear Rob's voice and my father's as if they were at a feast, but there's a wall between us. And I know that no place has been set for me.
Man. I mean, anytime the Crips are mentioned in the Stone Kings, I'm in.
But you do also have this little bit here to where he's talking about a bastard who did all these other things. And then you have like a trueborn, which is kind of like that kid. And then it immediately sends Bran to thinking about all the stuff he said he's not going to do, which is.
Yeah.
The living have no place at the feasts of the dead. It tore the heart from Sam to hold his silence. Then Bran's not dead, John. He wanted to say he's with friends and they're going north on a giant elk to find a three-eyed crow in the depths of the haunted forest. It sounded so mad that there were times Sam Tarly thought he must have dreamt it all, conjured it whole from fever and fear and hunger, but he would have blurted it out anyway if he had not given his word. Three times he had sworn to keep the secret, once to Bran himself, once to that strange boy Jojen Reed, and last of all to Cold Hands. The world believes the boy is dead. His rescuer had said as they parted, let his bones lie undisturbed. We want no seekers coming after us. Swear it, Samwell Tarly of the Night's Watch. Swear it for the life you owe me. Which is Cold Hands, by the way, telling him these things.
Which we
believe is Sir Dunk the Tall, you know. And it's so crazy that that's going on. And then it goes down just a little bit too, by the way. So then continuing on, miserable Sam shifted his weight and said, Lord Janus will never be chosen Lord Commander. But right after that, Sam, you're a sweet fool. Open your eyes. It's been happening for days. John had pushed his hair back out of his eyes and said, I mean, I may know nothing. I know that. Now, pray excuse me. I need to hit someone very hard with a sword. But it's like that open your eyes, which is like, boom, right there. Right after we're talking about like the three-eyed crow. Like that's even like that's not like a connection to the three-eyed crow.
No,
but it is George thematically keeping a like a theme that exists when we talk about people. Like we've seen that so many times where people dream about things. And just as you said, like a few little bit ago, where like the themes, he always like the color codes and stuff like that. It's like, that's like these other little pieces he weaves into the story and like surrounds.
It's little details, you know, and some would say like, who cares? But to me, for us, you know, people who've reread so many times, it's like, that's what keeps us coming back.
Yeah. Oh, here, by the way, it is here, by the way. I had it highlighted, but it's this one little line and it's so tight in here. So the next thing, Sam, you're a sweet fool. You can hear John saying, I was opening this for something else. So, but in this little paragraph, he says, open your eyes again. It's been happening for days. Could he be right? A man needed the votes of 2/3 of the sworn brothers to become.
Yeah. And you said 2/3 earlier.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, so you were right. Yeah.
Yeah. And after 9 days and 9 votes, no one was even close to that. So they just keep running the election until somebody gets 2/3.
Yeah.
And I guess as many people as they want could join in, and then they just start to drop off because.
I mean,
I'd be down with that. Popular vote, 2/3. That's how I feel most things should be run anyway.
Well, there's a lot. I mean, I'm not going to go into it, but there's actually
that would force actual compromise.
There's a lot of major issues in America that have 70 to like 80% favorability among the general public. Right. And it's never, you know, changed or passed in the law because our government doesn't work for us.
Yeah. Right. And some states do things where they're like, hey, you need 60% for this thing to, you know, pass or something. This is such a joke. And it's like 59%. What a joke.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. Anyway. Yeah. So, and then that's kind of it. And then it turns on to, but Sam does keep saying that throughout the chapter. Sam, you're a sweet fool. Open your eyes. It's been happening for days, like seeing all the crazy stuff that's been going on here. And then this chapter ultimately kind of ends with them talking a little about the fact that, and Sam the Slayer said, Gren, you slew another. It was the dragon glass that killed it. Sam told him for the 100th time, a lord's son, the maester's steward, and Sam the Slayer, Pip mused.
Mm-hmm. Sam the Slayer. I love Sam. I love Samwell chapters. If you think about everything that Sam has knowledge of, it's kind of bananas. He ran in the Cold Hands. He is the only person that knows Bran is alive.
Yeah, except for Mira and all them. And
well, yeah. I mean, like, you know, somewhere else.
Sure. So let's see here. So next time is John 11. So no, we still do. We have one more Sam chapter. I thought this was the final one.
Oh, I was wrong. Oh no.
No, it's okay. I was wrong too. I thought this
I'm
was
always the wrong.
No, you're fine. So yeah. So because we are getting down to the bottom here.
I think so, we'll end right when House of the Dragon drops.
Yeah. So this. As long as you don't miss any more weeks, I think we'll be fine. So we'll
stop going on vacations.
Seriously, stop having freaking power outages in my house. You should just quit your job, Jimmy, and then that'd be. close. So this is chapter 70. I mean, it's 75 because there is a prologue. So it's like 76, and then the epilogue and appendix don't actually count. So there's 80 chapters, 81 if you include, or no, 82 chapters if you include the epilogue, that'll get its own episode. So yeah, I mean, we're at Samwell 4. Next is John. So we have, what all do we have left?
John 11.
So we're done with Arya. So it's literally just Sam, John, Sansa, and there's one Tyrion chapter, which is going to be pure freaking fire.
Yeah, it's the one.
It's really, really
sweet.
So yeah, I mean, we just have two Sam and two John. I mean, this is kind of the big bulk of the last bit of the story is the stuff at the wall.
Yeah, and it's kind of cool that it's all worked out to do House of Dragon. We can just boom, hit boiled leather, like boom, start it right after House of the Dragon.
Yeah, I'm stoked.
Exciting times.
It's great. Okay. Oh, that was from last time. Those are reading from last time. So, okay. Well, with that, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 76, John 11.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
We will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.